It's Drew Drogi, and my podcast, Minor Revelations, is back. We're back on the air, back on the streets, back in your ear holes, back where it matters. I don't know what I'm saying. I'm just so excited that after 7 years, I am back doing this show that I love so much, that I really have genuinely missed. And I know people say, oh, I miss it. You really do. I personally, selfishly, feel better when I do these episodes and talk to people that I love, some of whom I know better than others. Sometimes my guests know each other, but people just get really real and just reveal anything they want to talk about that day and that space, wherever they are at. And I just have to say, first of all, I'm going to start off by apologizing for taking so long of a break. I really was busy and at a time in my life when it was getting overwhelming, putting pressure on doing a show every week, having that ready. So I am already, right now I'm way less busy, but I'm also willing to do 2 shows a month every other week. We're going to really announce that officially later, so I'm going to be vague about that. But we really want these to be good and special and also not stress anybody out. We're also working completely independently this time. I had the pleasure of doing this show on Feral Audio before with the wonderful Justin Marshall, who really helped so much with us figuring this out, as did Lan Romo at Starburns. And I have to give both of them shout outs because they really worked hard of getting all of these things back. My current producer, the extraordinary Jonathan Kornman, has been working tirelessly to make this happen. So I have to give him a thank you as well. A thank out? I think I just said I'm going to give him a thank out. I like that. Here's the thank out. I also want to give a thank out to the wonderful Brian Carpenter, who took my photo many years ago and then revamped it and then just did incredible graphics for us. And Brian is a genius photographer, a lovely human being. Use him for all your needs. I also want to thank Laura Shanehalls and Eric Williams for their incredible advice and helping and taking phone calls with us and just basically saying, here's how we do X, Y, and Z. And I love them both. While we're at it, I want to thank, I am so overwhelmed. We put up an Indiegogo and we made money so quickly. So many of you, whether you gave a dollar or, you know, $300, all of it matters. And I really mean that. And I know that sounds so empty, but I am so touched every time I click on the Indiegogo and I see people that I love, whether it be a friend, a fan, anything in between. Just helping this happen because it is a lot of money. It's a lot of energy doing this on our own and just feeling that support. And I guess I will talk about this in a little bit, but during the pandemic, feeling like I just was retired and no one told me, or I had nothing to say. And there was also a reason why I think the show took so long in coming back, because I was super busy at a time. And then, for different reasons, the podcast network that I was working for had to fold. But I was kind of like, oh, I'll get around to it. And I've learned when I did my other show, Glitter in the Garbage, years before that, on Earwolf, I took a break. There was also several years in between it. You take a break and then years go by. Then we had this, you know, COVID thing happen. And I sat on my couch and I did nothing. I didn't write a novel. I didn't create anything magical or I did nothing. I sat on the couch and watched movies that I'd always claimed to have watched all my life. And we were all kind of going through something at the same time. And I was just like, nobody cares what I have to say. I don't care what I have to say. So it's taken a while for me to come back into the world and just to sort of say, oh, I'm starting to have opinions about things again. I'm starting to have new feelings. I'm bringing up old feelings. I'm trying to open myself up to the world and be creatively vulnerable and say and create new things. And all of that was just sort of telling me to bring this show back. And I just have to thank every single person who, after they saw me out in the world, whether it was after a live show or out at the bar, because let's face it, those are the two places I'm at, theaters and bars, whoever said to me, I miss your podcast, whoever said to me like, oh, when are you going to bring the podcast back? I really appreciate that because it made me feel very happy. It's truly my favorite thing. I love anytime I get to create my own work, and a lot of it, out of necessity as creative people, we have to keep making our own work. But this was something that didn't necessarily feel like comedy. And I feel like, and mostly what I write and do, I love creating comedy. I love being in that, in that comedy space, as they would say. But I also, this is like, we get to relax and just be human beings and talk about things that are bothering us or things from childhood or something we just are embarrassed to admit or whatever. And I'm really seeing people, and I started this show because I felt like I was tired of saying the same things on everyone's podcast. In my situation, yes, I've met Chloe Sevigny. Yes, she was nice when we met. Yes, it was awkward. I don't know how she feels about my videos. That ask her about that. I just found myself bored saying the same things over and over again. And I felt like anybody that knew me knew those things already. And so I was like, I want to bring people on who maybe don't, you know, who want to share something that they've never shared before. If you've never heard this before, just so you know, people may not be funny on here. I'm giving people permission not to be funny. I'm giving you permission not to listen to it if it's not your thing. I just really enjoy people where they are, where they're at. And I will say I've done a couple episodes already before I've done this with some of my guests already. And these guests are fascinating. They bring so much to the table. And so hopefully you'll enjoy it on some level. And if not, hey, listen, I give you permission to not enjoy it. Haven't you been waiting for that from me? I'm sure you have. I'm going to give shout outs to everyone who contributed to the Indiegogo campaign, and I'm dividing them up. So I'm just going to mention the first 10 donations that we got. Kyle Mott Cannonberg, Linda and Carlos, that's Linda Morell, Matt Udvari, David Largman Murray, Ann Ocampo, Lanny McVie, David LeBaron, Daniel Nolan, Lauren Kellogg, Karen Brummel. You're a top 10. Thank you so much for just taking that leap. It's so daunting when you put it out there like, hey, please give us money. And you're clicking on it and you're just seeing that it's at zero. So you were, and I even noticed someone when I donate, like, how many people are donating to this? So you were all brave, lovely, supportive souls to be like, I'm going to give some money to this. And I really, really do appreciate it. Let's get into it. Let's talk about things. Let's figure out things about life. Welcome back. Hello, how are y'all doing?
I'm doing well.
It's so awkward. Like, we've been sitting here talking forever, and then I'm always just like, and now we're beginning.
It's a podcast now.
It's a podcast. Now it's officially happening. I'm sitting here with my good friends, Ben De La Creme and Ryan Garcia.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi. It's always that thing about Zoom, too, where we've learned now that you have to, like, oh, let me sit back because I don't want to cut off somebody else's audio.
Oh, I know. You have to, like, learn to read. And, like, that looks like a period at the end of your sentence. And now I'm going to chime in.
I have no issue with that. I plan on barreling through everything you two say.
I think that's, yeah. And as long as I'm louder and my microphone's better, then I'm going to cut out your sound. I'm prepared for this.
Even better. I'm just going to distract and wave and make everything about me. I love that. I love it so much. I know. It's like, I know, Ryan, you and I have done a lot. We did a lot of performing on Zoom. And Dayla, did you do a lot of performing on Zoom as well?
Yeah, so much during the pandemic. It was, I actually like turned my partner's office, we like pulled out the couch and stuff, and I like hung a curtain and turned it into like a little stage area because I had to do all these Zoom shows. It was really weird.
Yeah.
It's the thing that we had to do. And it's just that awful thing too, where you have to kind of wait for other people to finish talking, and you're like, I think you're done. And then you have, at most, you get like an emoji of hands that applaud from an audience. Like, we did the, like, you did it. Or, you know, I don't even know what it means. It's sort of like, I guess that feels like love and validation.
I was mostly performing solo, and it's weird because you're like, I pause for laughs? Is this amusing?
Oh, gosh. Oh, I know. The worst, because you're just literally like saying things and then like...
My favorite was the live chat that would be happening. Like, sometimes we'd do live things and they'd be on YouTube and then there'd be like audience members in there chatting. And my favorite part was when I wasn't performing and I got to sneak into the chat and just be talking with the people that were watching it. And I also wish that I had any kind of like gauge on what it's like because I think being in here, seeing where the sausage is made, we have such a relationship with what doing Zoom performance is.
I want to know
what it's actually like to sit down and just watch a Zoom performance of something. Like, I want to know if that's actually fulfilling.
Well, I did. And I did see a couple things that were incredible. Like, I mean, I did see things that I was like, they really figured out how to, like Michael Urey, who was also an upcoming guest, or maybe he's already been a guest on the show. I don't know how we record this, but he did Buyer and Seller in his apartment. His partner, Ryan Spahn, like, helped him with it. And it was unbelievable to watch it. I enjoyed it as much, easily as much as when he did it live. But then a lot of other things I saw that I was like, oh, I just can't enjoy this at all. And I really understand, like, you really have to understand the format. I think also because he found a way to still use space, like, he still used... So it wasn't just, you know, like, I don't know.
That's like such a key, is thinking about the lens in the way that you have to in like movie making. And it's
right.
And it's weird because you're doing it live and there's no stopping it. And it's like the vibe of a live show. But thinking about just like what the lens is looking at, I saw a few shows that were kind of like, you know, we were all working it out. But Alaska Thunderfuck did an amazing hour on Zoom where she was, and she did it with her, I think it was her assistant, Jeremy, was like moving the camera. Like she would move the camera and it would be like on her in one space, and then it would go and it would be on a puppet stage and she'd do a little puppet show. And then it would be like, she just kept revealing new spaces. It was really cool.
Wow. That's really, really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I feel like, you know, like this format, like with a podcast, it's like goes back to radio theater where, you know, we're adding a video element now, but when I did this before, it was just, and so we're really, you tune into a podcast expecting this, and you're excited. I mean, even when it's an added bonus when there's video, but you're there to be like, I'm gonna hear what these people have to say. But when you're thinking about like a narrative and a show involving characters and wigs and story and, you know, punchlines or connection on any level, it is hard when you're literally expecting the audience. It's also mentally taxing too to watch a thing and go, I have to remember to make sense out of all of this happening. It requires a lot more work on the audience's part.
Yeah.
To stay engaged.
I will say, it just reminded me of, in an acting class, someone that set up their phone and their iPad and their computer in different spaces. And as the character would move through the space, you would get them in different shots.
Oh,
and I thought actually that was really clever. And it is. It's such a way of like, okay, new medium. Now figure out how to make this interesting for the way that it's being imbibed.
Right.
But don't
you
also feel like audiences, it was like audiences got gentler, they got like more open.
Yeah.
I think there was like so much more of an appreciation for how hard we were working to like bring them something, and it was really kind of beautiful in that way.
I was so hard on myself after the shows, like feeling like I wasn't doing that thing that I normally feel like I can do when I do well, like, and I just was feeling none of it. And then the people's comments were not, they didn't feel like they were just taking care of my feelings. They were like, thank you so much for doing this. We really loved this. And and they would say, I used to find it such a condescending thing, like, oh, you worked so hard on that. Oh, it looked like you put a lot into that. But they really meant it during that time. And I don't know about y'all, but I feel like live performing now, audiences are amazing. I mean,
yeah, yes.
I occasionally still, you know, get up and bomb, whatever. But when I do, I'm doing a lot of live improv shows now, and we've had standing ovations. We get up and we barely, like, I mean, there's sometimes I want to look at the crowd and be like, we weren't that funny. The audiences are so happy to be there, and it makes me happy. And I'm like, I'm that way when I sit in an audience now too. And I have to remind myself of like, enjoy this. This is amazing. This is magical what's happening. And this thing that we took for granted, because like, we kind of do this art form that's existed since cave people, of just getting people together and like kind of making people laugh and entertain and banging rocks together to go, oh, I bang rocks too. I understand that. I connect, you know, that thing that's very innate in the human experience of entertaining and being entertained.
I think that aspect too of like, oh, I bang rocks too, is, you know, we're all on Zoom and other people are using this same format to do meetings. And they're like, I'm trying to captivate my coworkers for 20 minutes while I tell them about the new thing we're distributing. And here you are actually putting on a show that's funny and entertaining. And like, now I can appreciate how much work goes into that.
Right. Cause they like didn't understand the steps involved or what happens behind the scenes when, like, sort of pre-pandemic, maybe. I mean, some people did, you know, but a lot of people wouldn't think that way. But suddenly on Zoom, I have access to everything you're using to make this happen.
Right.
And I see that I'm not doing it and you are. Like, it's more relatable.
Yeah, and when you can stretch that and do something interesting or camera moves or whatever to make it more dynamic, that's, like, so awe-inspiring. Yeah. I will say, no, yeah. Drew, also, like, being on the audience side of being seeing shows again, like, I'm crying so much more in live performances than I ever have been. Like, it's affecting in such a different way now that we've gotten it ripped away from us for a time.
Yes. And it's this weird moment right now because I feel like, on one hand, just in life, I mean, on the roads, I'm terrified when I get in my car now. People drive like monsters. People are animals in life. And there are moments and things happen. And you're like, even like going on walks and people won't get away, like, are just very strange. But on the other hand, there's this other side of humanity that's gotten way gentler and way more gracious and grateful. And I feel like, and who knows when this is going to air, but last night were the Oscars. And I noticed on the Oscars last night how, like, emotional they were, how, like, kind and gentle the Oscars were last night, and people were just sort of like very grateful to be there and celebrating. And I guess it's about movies and it's whatever, but it, like, there didn't feel like there's, you know, a couple of years there's like a cynicism, and, you know, and whoever's like, I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a fantastic job last night. I really did. And I thought, like, a lot of times the host is like, oh, they're so cynical. It seems like they hate movies. They feel like they hate being there. And last night about, like, oh, everybody just feels really like, oh, how grateful we are that we can go back to the theater and, you know, hang out with Nicole Kidman or whatever we're doing, and then just not feel like we're so, like, trapped and yeah. isolated. So it's a very weird time right now. It's very strange to know, like, what's in the zeitgeist, because part of me is like, I don't even know, and I say this a lot, I don't even know what to talk about. Right. I don't know what to write about. I'm trying to, you know, kind of my thing is always like, what's wrong with people? I'm going to write what's wrong and what's terrible about people. That's what's fun for me to comment on. And there's plenty still, of course, and there always will be. But I also ultimately, I want things to be kinder and gentler in the world. And so it's like at the most of, like, as awful, and it's what I feel like I always say, you know, it's like, let's play terrible people and let's laugh at terrible people so that we aren't those people, and that way we try not to be. And so that we kind of call out that behavior and have other people see it and go, oh yeah, don't be this person, as opposed to necessarily thinking it's just holding a mirror up and going, you know, or agreeing with what they're coming up with and or what they're saying. Because I think it's more like, no, I think that's kind of, I feel like my job in, like, comedy is to just call out like, oh, this is kind of shitty behavior. Let's like explore that. And maybe try to do better. But I don't know.
Speaking of the Oscars last night, like, one of my biggest takeaways was when he was interviewing Malala. And there was that woman sitting three rows behind wearing this massive white
ocean, the wave of tulle. Why? That was like
I understand. I understand if that's the look of the dress for the red carpet. But, like, even Lady Gaga changed to a T-shirt. Like, can't we get something to pull that down so that the rows behind you can see what's happening? It just seemed insane.
Well, I mean, Ben, you're a world famous drag queen, and somebody pointed out that drag queen. And it's like, someone said, like, in the drag world, you would have had that look. And then, like Ryan said, you would pull a string and do a reveal when you sat to your seat, and you would be like, oh, look, I'm seat-worthy. Or,
yeah,
like,
you'd have, like, a major updo, and then you'd pull a string, and it would turn into, like, a long,
yeah,
flowing Pocahontas look. I actually went to this was so dumb. I went to a premiere of the final season of Orange is the New Black in New York, and I went in drag, and I felt so stupid that I wore an updo. I sat down and I was like, what am I doing? I felt terrible. The people behind me were mad.
Oh, I can imagine. I'll never do it again. You do wonder, you're like, oh, I should not have worn my Abe Lincoln top hat to sit in this theater or this giant wig. Or...
But also, if you invite a drag queen to your event, put her in a box seat. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know there is a thing, too, on the seating and the whole thing, and when wondering, like, who had to sit behind that woman. And then also, like, you know, that a musician, I believe, is a woman who was in that outfit. I don't know anything about her, but I'm also, like, trying to give her some credit. Like, maybe she was mortified,
yeah,
and didn't know how to play that moment.
It felt that way when the camera was on her, that she was just like, please don't comment on this. Please don't comment on this. I know, I'm aware. It's terrible. I feel terrible. I'm already fired my designer. It's the worst.
And you're just like, oh God, is it must be, like, tied into the dress. Like, you couldn't just rip it off and be like, I've got to give this back.
This is not my minor revelation for the day, but it's a minor revelation, which is that I did not watch the Oscars.
Hey, that's fine.
So I'm really like, I'm intently listening. I'm learning a lot.
Yeah. It's everything you need to know about it's just like with all the major things in the world, you'll find out the next day.
Yeah.
Like you'll get the highlights. You've definitely, have you seen the picture of this, this artist and thing? Okay. You will. I guarantee you, like later today, somebody will post it somewhere on social.
I can't wait.
It was one of the highlights tonight. Also, it was a very like kind of uneventful night. Like there was no slap. There was no speech that was really problematic or anything like that. So it'll be like, it's on everyone's list of like most, you know, recognizable things.
Oh look. You can't see it.
Ryan's pulling it up.
Anyway, it looks, since you can't see it because of the exposure on my camera.
Oh yeah, it's hard to see
it's
on
like
the camera.
It's like a cloud of tulle that has a full circle around my head.
And it's just in the middle of the row. Right.
Like you can't even see it here, God. Unfortunately.
Is that the actual shot? Is that what?
Oh,
we
yeah.
Were...
Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's like a thing like that. And so when she sat down, it was like that giant cloud behind her head.
Yeah. That poor person. They did and not know what was going.
Yeah.
What they were.
And then
in
you
for
just and you don't really think like, oh, I am going to be sitting down.
It's just bad planning.
In this.
It's right. Has that stylist ever styled somebody for a show where they're going to be sitting in like auditorium type seating?
Right.
She looks gorgeous though.
Unbelievable.
She's gorgeous, stunning. Like Ryan said. Great look for the champagne carpet, which was also disgusting. It looked like a hotel, like convention center. Like they were like, no red carpet this year. And like, great. How about any other color? Anything else would have been great.
Why
other
no
than
red
like
carpet? What was the deal?
It was champagne. I guess in person, it probably looked closer to like pale gold, like champagne. But on camera, it just looked like boring beige. Like it looked like
but
convention center.
But why mess
center
with that tradition? Like why
I know,
did they decide
and it
to move
dirty
away from red?
It was like at a certain point you're like, yeah, weird. Like red will hide a lot of your mistakes, or like an emerald green would be gorgeous, you know, like a royal purple, you know, I mean, get creative, but yeah, it was not.
My first thought when I saw it was it like that a photographer said, oh, it's going to be great, better for the lighting because it's going to pop it up. It's like putting a little like, you know, pizza box underneath
right.
their face
right.
to give a little bit extra. But that's probably not what anyone was thinking, but that's where my head went.
A little trail of pizza boxes would have been fun.
That would have been nice.
Remember when Ellen ordered pizza? That was one of the worst moments in the history of the Oscars. I'm sorry. Like, I love that we can shit on Ellen now because but like, she, talk about a host that did not, seemed like she was so miserable from the second she walked out in those Oscars and then ordered pizza for everyone. Like, that was a fun bit. Like, oh my God, that was so joyless. I was like, ew, no. Ugh. Anyway. Y'all are both nicer than me. You're both like, Drew, keep talking. I'm going to say nothing. I don't want to get dragged up.
Ellen.
I would love to hear from both or either of you. I'd love to hear what your revelation is. I always tell people, don't tell me until we're rolling. So I have no idea what you're going to tell me. But hey, it could be big or small and there's no pressure either way. What? Who wants to go first?
Who wants to go first? Me?
Go for it.
Okay. All right, I'm prepared. I was thinking about this because you were sort of saying it could be whatever and it doesn't necessarily have to be something we've like never told somebody, but it's something
right.
that I don't talk about because I don't think of it, but for some reason it sprung into my head this weekend that I wasn't supposed to be born. So my mom got pregnant. And then she got diagnosed with cancer and she lost the baby. And then she wasn't supposed to be able to have another child. And so they were going to adopt a baby. And then she got pregnant with me. And
wow.
You're a miracle child.
Yeah. Yes. So she used to like call me a miracle baby. And it's not like something I think about a lot. But every once in a while, and I'm talking like every like 5 years, and it sprung into my head this weekend. And I was like, because, I don't know, I've been having sort of, like, a time lately, and I'm just like, oh, things feel hard, and what's next?
Yeah, same, sure.
And then I was like, oh, wait, you weren't even supposed to be born. Yeah. And then you were, like, so miserable as a kid, and you, like, grew up anyway. And then you, like, weren't supposed to be a drag queen for a living, and you did it anyway. And it all feels like an extension of that baby moment. And it just feels very hopeful.
I love that.
Oh, my God, that's beautiful.
That makes me so happy, and I love that that's how you spun the you weren't supposed to be born, as so many people take the negative with that. Now, question, did your parents adopt someone before you were born, or they were going to eventually?
They were going to, yeah. It was really interesting, too, because a few years ago, I found the, like, binder that was my parents' application for adoption, where they have to write essays about why they are good candidates to be parents.
Wow.
It's really special. I haven't even been able to read the whole thing because it's kind of intense, but...
I can imagine.
It's amazing.
Have there been any things you've read from it that, like, really, like, were interesting or sparked your...
Well, you know, a big thing was I grew up in a house that had been in my family for a long time. It was in rural Connecticut, and my grandparents lived there, and their parents lived there, and my parents were so excited to live there because my dad had really fond memories from his childhood, and he and my mom got married there, and it was just like a big family house. And a lot of what my mom wrote talked about how excited she was to, like, share this place and, like, nature and all of this. I fucking hated it there. I hated it. I was so miserable my entire childhood. I got out the second I could. I don't even like visiting that house. I, like, make my dad visit me. But it was just, like, interesting to see, like, I mean, my mom, like, they were both, like, so good and generous and had such, and it's just, like, you can't plan that, you know? You just, like, can't plan what your kid's going to be into. It's interesting. I don't know. I don't know what to take away from that, but.
And yet you have that faux nature surrounding you in the background.
You literally
right
have this
now.
Olin Mills, gorgeous, wooded, The Last of Us set background. Friday the 13th, part 6.
To remind yourself that you don't need to actually be in nature to enjoy nature.
Exactly. The best part of it is it's not here. No, I love being in nature, and I also really like leaving.
Right, right.
You know.
A distance.
I'm the same way. I mean, I'm the same way. I do love a nice mountain moment or out in the woods. I love all that. But also, I think, like, growing up in North Carolina, where, I grew up in a small town that I sort of say, like, it's, I've said before, it's like Burbank with barbecue. Like, it's really not, like, people think the South, and they think it's, like, you know, the woods of Eastern Kentucky, where I've also spent time, but, like, that's not really the South that I grew up in. It was very, like, small town Americana. But there's still part of me that's all about, like, always wanted a city, always wanted to live in a city, always, like, watched shows about the city. My favorite sitcoms, all the families lived in a city. My favorite movies. When I first went to New York or LA as a kid, I felt very comfortable there. I was like, I like how it works here. I get this whole thing. I go back home to the South. I love my family. And I have a relatively great upbringing. I didn't feel like I had major things, at least at home. And I am so ready to go. Like, I love them, but it's so slow. It's also, at night, I can be the most scared when there's, like, not enough things happening around me. It's like, oh, that is scary to me. And I get that.
Very similar.
But I love that the idea that you feel like I'm here for a reason. And not to piggyback on your story, Ben, I'm really bad about this, and this is just, I'm sorry, everybody. I will go, I'm like that too. But
I think that's what conversations are.
Well, I guess it is sometimes. I'm going to wait for you to finish talking so that I can make it all about me. Minor Revelations is supported by Scruff. So after you listen to the podcast, go on there and give your buddies a woof. Or do it now. I can't tell you what to do. Thanks, Scruff. I believe I was planned. Like, you know, I think that I was, you know, born on my parents' third anniversary or whatever, but I was born not expected to live. And I was born with severe, they were saying I might be mentally handicapped. I might not have hearing. I might not have, like, vision. I might be blind. Like, I was not breathing when I was born. And so I was given very little chance of survival. pulled through that. My parents were very, and they were very young when they had me, and it was like, or, you know, mid late 20s, whatever, but still, I can't imagine as a 46-year-old being like, oh my gosh, I can't imagine being that age and having your first child and it be, you know, not knowing. And so it was very touch and go. And then, you know, obviously I pulled through. But then the first 2 or 3 years of my life, I was a very sick kid. I had spinal meningitis. I had two or three hernia operations. I was always in, I had pneumonia, really bad pneumonia as a child, in the hospital a lot. So my first 2 or 3 years, I was always in hospitals. And then I've had a relatively, knock on wood, healthy life. I mean, I have not been that bad. I've been very grateful that, like, I feel like, oh, I did a lot. I paid a lot of those dues really early in my life. But also, I realize, like, I'm very much an individual. I'm very much like a, I've got this. I'm a fighter. I'm gonna, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if there's something in me that's just like, I've got something to do here. Like, I'm not gonna give up, and I'm gonna, and I have something to say. I don't know what, but I've had to say that to myself when I feel like I'm worthless and I'm pointless and I'm, you know, irrelevant, which I go through a lot, that I'm sort of like, I have to go back to like, oh, and then why I don't seek out a partner. And I've lately been like, I really want to date somebody now for the first time in my life. I'm trying to like put that out there a little bit, like more actively than I ever have before. But I
Is
also
that why you started the podcast back up?
Yeah. So that I could
Is this
find
a
dates.
Speed date?
Is this a speed dating
so
thing?
Great. I found out my assistant told me that both of you are married, partnered pretty much. So
but we do know people, you know.
Oh, great. If you know anyone, it doesn't matter. Just send them
just
away.
Just networking for dating. That's imagine. The whole reason.
What if it started working and like, so if you know anybody, I'm really looking. No, but I have to
Oh, that's
actively...
why these minor, you're like, you yeah. need to like dig it. You need to know the dirt before you.
Oh, exactly. I'll call you up date. Later and be like, you weren't supposed to live. Take me out to pizza tonight. Or I'm telling everyone.
Take me on the pizza carpet. I want you to walk me down that pizza carpet tonight.
This podcast is never going to see the light of day. It's just for my own shit bank on all of you, on each of my friends.
I think
no,
that,
but I have
but,
to like, actively want the, somebody.
Listen, I want to hear this part too. But I think it's, you know, you talking about the, like, you have something to do, like you have something to fight for is really amazing and powerful. And it's also like you have the proof that you can fight through something really hard. Like there's a fact that is like embedded in your body from early in your life that says that gives you the knowledge that like you can make it to the other end of something like that. And that's huge.
Yeah.
Right. And it's something that like I don't even consciously know. It's something that I've known in my body before I even had a consciousness, like it's a, or just had any sort of, and I really have no memory of being in a hospital. I mean, I really don't remember that at all. And so that's one of those things that is just like, certainly my parents do, but it's just something that's sort of like, you know, but it is, I do think like, oh, I have to ask for help. I have to act, that's what I was going to say earlier. Like I have to go, hey, I would like to have someone else in my life. Because I know that I can take care of everything on my own. Like, I feel very confident in my own thing. That's not always the best way to do things, though. And I'm learning, you know, as I get older, that's like, oh, asking for help is a lovely way of loving yourself and loving your friends and loving people and going, oh, right, this is part of it, as opposed to I've got it, I'm good. Because I'm not always good, and I do need somebody else, and I need everyone in my life. But it's, but I'm also grateful in that sense of like, oh, yes, like you said, there's proof in the fact that you can push through it. And I've also been such a, I try really hard and with other friends too, to sort of encourage them to like, just keep going, go through it, feel all your feelings, feel the most awful things that you need to feel and share them. Cause we probably have gone through them as well. And we felt them as well, and keep going. And like, you think about all the people in the world who love you and think of those moments when you really do love yourself. And hopefully there are many of those moments as well. And like, you know, that's why you do this. And you're allowed those moments to feel like blah or awful or anything in between, you know?
Yeah.
I love
that. When I was born just fine. I was,
but you're still a miracle baby.
Well, aren't That's we all right. like there's so many sperm with so much genetic material going toward one egg. So like all of us in some sense are a miracle that we were the one miraculous. Sperm that made it to that one egg at that specific time. It's unbelievable.
100%.
Some people are just more miracle than others. I'm probably less miracle of the three of
different,
us. Different miracle. I'm a different miracle.
Ew, different miracle.
I don't shine quite as bright. But I was a
I want that to be our sitcom. Could we have a sitcom called Different Miracles?
Ew, I love
I'd
it.
Watch
I'm,
it.
I'm on board. I'm there.
I was a 10-pound baby, and the nurses all came and laughed at me. Because it was mostly in my head. Like, I was so out of balance as a baby.
That's so
movie
cute.
Star.
This, the movie star. I grew into it, though. I needed to keep
movie
that stars bigger
have big
head.
Heads.
Yeah. I still have a large head. But yeah, that my like most of the 10 pounds was at the top. And for nurses that saw so many babies, they were still like, oh, you got to go see this one. He is abnormal.
That's so adorable, though.
Like those bobblehead dolls. Yeah. Are those the ones that have just their all head? Or like
I'm
Funko.
Picturing the Chicken Little
like a Funko
cartoon.
Doll.
Yeah, I was a
yes.
I was a Funko Pop of myself as a baby.
Oh my god, I love that. I love that. Ryan, what's your take?
My minor revelation is I grew up in a Cuban Catholic household, and that's just a little precursor to let you know that like. In the Cuban Catholic way of living, it's very much about nobody has any problems, everyone's good, and at least presents as having it all together. And then, you know, you go confess it to a priest later, which who knows, like we've all discovered if that was a good or bad idea over time.
Right.
Because of that, I was very practiced at keeping things secret. And in high school, I was a kid that, like, I got good grades on tests, and so I thought all homework was meaningless. And so I just wouldn't do homework. And because of that, I would get bad grades, but good grades on tests and the SAT and the ACT. But my report card would come out, and I remember, my parents were very on watch because they knew that I didn't do my homework. They knew I had bad grades. And so at one point, my mom came to me, and she said, I'm going to contact all your teachers and get your grades. And so she emailed all of my teachers at the school to ask for my grades. And so...
So they didn't have to see them when you got report cards? They didn't have to, like, sign your report card?
No, they did, but this was, like, mid-semester.
Oh, okay.
This was, like, a check-in of, like, I don't trust that you're really getting it together now, Ryan.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to do a little digging. And so I went into my mom's email and blocked all my email, my teachers' email addresses... And
wait, how old were you?
This was high school. This must have been sophomore year high school. So I was like 15, 16. And I went to my teachers at school and I said, hey, yeah, our email is down. Like, it's not working. It's like, I think email was new enough that nobody knew well enough to question me. And also, like, I was a kid. So, like, oh, he must understand technology better than we do. And so I said, can you print out the grades so I can take them to my mom? And so I got all the grades, and the bad ones I threw away, and the good ones I kept with me, and I went home, and I went to my mom. I said, yeah, the email server at school is down, so these teachers, and the teachers that I had good grades with, I was like, they got it to me. I'm asking the other ones, but they're just slow. And so I made the teachers who I had bad grades in their classes seem like they were the bad guy. And had a whole...
I love the amount of time you took to like... scam everybody and to spin all those plates and to keep all your lies going.
Yeah,
it's
you
like,
were like a full-on con artist.
Yeah.
That was like...
I love it.
That was like Better Call Saul stuff.
Yeah. And I think I still get off a little bit on getting away with things and having secrets. But I also... I remember because this didn't pay off well. Like, in the end, I remember coming home one day and my mom in the kitchen... was fine. Uh-oh. She was like, hey, how are you? And I walked in like, good, how are you? Good, okay, great. Walked out to my room, and on my door was taped an envelope with my grades. And so now anytime I see anybody and they're acting just a little bit weird, I think, oh, God, what have I done?
Oh, I'm in trouble. They found me out.
That's also like masterfully passive-aggressive. What was the next interaction with your mother? Did she keep up that passive aggressive ruse?
Yeah, I know.
That's
Did she just
amazing.
Post it on the wall and wait for you to bring it up? Or
no, she knew. You know, when I found them there on the door, like my stomach sank, and I turned back, you know, toward the kitchen, and I had that thought of like, do I just go in my room and close the door or do I go and face the music? And I went back down there and she just was like, yeah. I don't think they ever found out about the email ruse. I think that I got to keep secret, but they did find out about the grades eventually. And if they listen to this podcast, it's going
to
be a surprise.
I was going to say, they're going to find out now when they listen to this. It's the worst feeling. Also, those formative years of all your learning emotions and how to process things. And so, yes, it always goes back. I mean, I get it too. Like, anytime now, I mean, it also used to be a world where we used to just call each other. And if you weren't available, you would leave a message or whatever. Or you would just let it ring or call back people. Or just see like, oh, so-and-so called me, I'll call them back. Now people go, can you talk? They text you and ask if you can have a phone call. And it does feel way heavier. It's like, oh, what have I done wrong? Because I'm going to have to like sit down and be prepared for you to tell me like, hey, I'm really mad at you or I'm disappointed in you or X, Y, and Z.
I have a friend who cold calls me all the time, and my blood runs cold every time it happens. I have the same feeling. I always feel like something bad is happening. I hate getting a phone call. I hate it.
I don't feel like I do have a few friends who will call. I feel there's certain people that I know when they're calling me that they just want to chat or talk, whatever. But I would say, yeah, normally they're people that. Oh, and the worst is like someone from like, you know, high school or college or whatever calling you and you're immediately like, oh, who died? Like that's immediately the thought of like, what horrible thing am I going to prepare myself for? But I do feel like, do y'all feel like people are mad at you a lot? Because I do.
I'm always under the impression that people are upset with me, let down by me, or mad at me. I just think that I think also we live in a world where anxiety I think like, you know, a lot of modern conveniences have helped with anxiety. Like, oh, God, I'm not going to die of smallpox anymore. So that's great. I don't have to worry about where I'm going for that reason. But we live in a world where technology is like, if you have an anxiety issue, the technology is built to turn that to an 11.
Oh, that's such you're so right.
Like you always have to be available. Any text that comes in could be the one where you get a job or lose a job. Everybody has full access to what you've done in the past, and now you're canceled. Now you're in trouble. That like everything is built for us to be on high alert.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, I feel like I didn't used to have, I don't think this much anxiety pre-pandemic, but I have had enough time to sit in my own thoughts. And when I don't hear from someone, I assume people are mad at me, or people don't like my work. They don't like me. There's something that, or also like, you know, I mean, y'all both know me and you know that I love to bitch about little things. You know, I love to walk into a room and go, this horrible person in line at Starbucks. It's my favorite thing to talk about. I love to enter a room complaining. I love to have an issue with something. It's just my little like, here we go. And I know that it's my way. Like, I will complain about that before I do major things. Mm-hmm. Like, the world is on fire or whatever. Like, rarely am I in that place. And so, also, I think people are afraid of being that with me. Like, I've had people be like, oh, Drew, the worst thing I would imagine is that you'd be judging me. Mm. Or, like, think of me in this way. And it's like, well, at the very worst, if I love you and you're my friend, and I'm complaining about you, whatever reason, in my heart, I love you. And it doesn't mean anything against you. I just want to like vent and go, blah. And I will call a friend and go, oh my God. But I assume you do that about me. Or if you don't, I don't care. Like I don't, that's one of those things that the stuff that I worry about. I'm like, I can't worry about like what you are not saying about me when I'm not in the room. Like, you know, but
see,
I also.
Now for the first time, I am picturing you venting about me.
We were all here waiting in this Zoom, and then we get a text from Ben saying, oh I thought God. It was at 2:30. Oh, you know what? Why don't you work on getting your calendar right, Ben?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to call each of you, and I'm going to complain about the other one. And go, I'm just blowing off steam. It's just my thing. I love them, but no, I just think it's like there's something in me that likes to be like Andy Rooney about things. I enjoy that, like,
it's harmless. It's totally harmless venting.
I hope so. I mean it harmlessly. And so I don't think that, like, if there's a major issue with my friends or anyone that I go, oh, my God, this is the thing, I'm trying to be better about letting people know. I go, hey, this is the thing. And because I love you, I want to talk about this. And I want to clear this because I would hate if I was doing anything and you didn't tell me. And I do And I do feel like, oh, our friendship's strong enough that I can tell you this. And even if it's weird or like we have an argument or whatever, ultimately we love each other and we're going to get through this. We have to. The only way out is through, or whatever that expression is. So you're like, I'm not going to just avoid it. Or it's so minor and I know you are who you are. And I have my little weird shit too. And I'm a strange little bird myself that I just know that's you. And I'm not going to change that about you. And I really don't want to. I don't want to make everyone the same. I don't want everyone to be me and think the way I think about everything as much as I want to, you know, complain about it.
But I think that's so it. And I think the fear I have is that people are harboring things they don't like about me and not sharing it out of fear, because I think that some of the most important like shifts in my life have come from friends opening up to me and saying, hey, you're kind of being a dick. And like for me, when I was in high school, another high school story, I was looking around, and this is also a lot of my body dysmorphia issues come from this, but I was looking around and I was like a little bit chubbier, just a little I was wherever I was. I ate a lot to deal with my feelings. And I looked around and all of the thin kids were getting the leading roles in the high school plays. And I thought, I know how to solve this. And I did the Atkins diet and I lost 40 pounds and I booked a lead role. And I went, aha, I've discovered why people value me. And and live with that to this day. But after I got that role, I thought I was hot shit. And my friend Mike Newquist, I thank like the world every day that he came up to me. He's like, he was in that play with me. He said, hey, Ryan, you kind of turned into a dick. And I went, wow.
Wow.
I needed to hear that from you because I had no idea.
And good for you that you have the wherewithal, if not in the moment immediately, but ultimately to listen to him.
Yeah.
And good for him to have the bravery to love you enough to say that to you, but also the fact that you were able to go, oh, shit, because a lot of people can't. But it's also, it is a moment, you know, when you have a thing with somebody, it's like you take that risk and you go on that, you go, I got to say something, and you got to be willing to be like, you're not going to like this right now, but it is a great, it's like, we have to do that sometimes.
Well, one thing I can say about Catholicism is that it says that it's like a lot of guilt. So at least it primed me for it's my fault. So when someone says something like that, it's like, oh, maybe I should take a look at this rather than going on the offensive of like, excuse me, I think I know what I'm doing.
Right.
You know, for all the negatives to it, at least there's an aspect of like, let me do some self-reflection here.
Oh, 100%. And I do feel like there's that thing of, you know, because I hate when people say, drives me crazy, so many things I hate people say, but one of them is, oh, I hate what you'd say about me when I leave the room. And it's always that thing where I go, first of all, we're not talking about you. It's not about you all the time. Also, it doesn't matter what I say about you when you're not in the room, because it's not really about you. It's really about me and my like fucking eating blow off steam. If it's a major thing, I would hope that I'm mature enough to let you know. But it's not like a thing that's like, oh my God, how stupid is so and so, or I hate blah blah blah. And it's like, but it is really funny when you know when people say that, because it implies that like there's no loyalty. That the second anyone leaves the room, Drew Drogi will just rip everyone who's not in the room a new asshole. And I'm like, I really hope no one thinks that about me, because that's a terrible person to have. And I think, I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Oh, no. I just interrupted you, so thank you for apologizing. Okay. But every time that I've heard you talk that way, there is always like love in there, because it is never the thing that you're talking about. Like, it's never like the, oh my God, I hate this person. There's always like the, this person has these qualities that drive me nuts, and I'm talking about it in a way that makes it very clear that there's love for them, and I'm trying to work through this feeling.
And 100%.
And whenever you're not in the room, Drew, I usually tell people, oh, you should hear what Drew said about you.
So that's where it's coming from.
Yeah, I've spreaded it. Yeah.
Poisoning people. Oh, okay.
That's,
I'm so glad
now it's time
this.
For your minor revelation. This is why they think that.
Minor revelation is I have nothing nice to say about anyone when I'm not looking at them.
That is not a revelation to anyone.
No, I love that and appreciate that. I think also, like, too, like, it, not to just be so like, oh, we're artists and artists are interested, but we're all crazy. Yeah. Like, to do what we do, we all are so quirky and insane. And like, I do think when I get around people who, you know, who work 9-to-5 jobs or who do other things, and they're just not, they are like, how do you, and I'm like, oh yeah, we all kind of, we put a lot out there and we kind of live kind of raw and naked and afraid and trembling and too much and too little at the same time. And we have to constantly, and we're constantly looking for the next job. But there's also that weird thing. We're looking for the validation. We're looking for the audience or whatever, like on some weird level. And then we try not to be that way. So we have to tamp that down and be cool and chill and like everything's fine. And I'm hashtag blessed. We have a lot going on. And so I am aware that we all are in that. So when I need to vent about somebody, I'm like, oh, well, that's a baseline about that person. And I'm also crazy too. I mean, I say now we're all crazy, and I'm 100% include myself in that. I don't be like, except for me.
Right.
I'm perfectly put together.
It's nice to hear people articulate that out loud, because I think even though I think a lot of people do articulate it on some level, it is, craziness can feel very lonely and isolating, and it's hard when it's just so useful for people to repeat that over and over and over, because it's really easy to forget. I get so in my head. I get less in my head with people I know being upset with me. I get really in my head when I meet new people. I like get really in my head about what they think of me, and it makes me act like a different person that I like less, because I'll really like,
of course,
hold myself back. And so, working on that.
Well, and it's like, you, when you meet somebody you really admire and you want them to like you, and you're like, who am I being right now? I hate this person that I'm being. Yes. I just want to run away. And yet I also want to be like, you know, I want to be cool. And, you know, I know I will constantly go through that. And there's certain people I've had to let go of, like, not hearing back from certain people. And you kind of go, well, I didn't ask them a pressing question. I'm assuming they're busy. I can't assume they're sitting at home with a cauldron that they pour my dreams into every time they hear from me. And they go, we're hurting him more. It's like, I can't think that way. So just sort of giving everybody the space, and also realizing that, like, they might be going through something right now, or they may have literally gotten it in a moment when they just couldn't and they don't get back to you. And because communication now, it's like with texting and DMing and all that, it's like a one long conversation that's never over, or with everyone in the world.
Or multiple conversations that you're having different, like I'm having different subjects of conversations on different platforms with the same person simultaneously. Like, we're having one conversation about Instagram, and like some meme on Instagram, while having a serious conversation about relationships and text messages. And then I have some friends that I know, they're never going to text me back because they're so bad at it. And I think like it's also getting okay with, I think the thing that I've had trouble getting okay with is trusting that everyone else is taking care of their own boundaries. And like I'm not going to, instead of thinking they're mad at me or what are they thinking of me, I'm just going to be okay with double texting. I'm just going to be okay with, like, I'm going to hit you up again, because instead of, I'm just going to assume that maybe you were busy or you need this to be like brought up back to the top of the text river of like maybe it's gone way down the path, because I don't know how much correspondence you've had or how crazy your week is. And instead of making it about me, I'm just going to let you know I'm still thinking over here about that question I had.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's such a great way of putting it, about like making sure other people take care of their boundaries. Because I think we only think about ourselves and like, oh, I hope you're not mad at me. How does that reflect on me? And without thinking like them, the other person, there's somebody else involved in that. And they may not, you know, or they might read your message and go, oh, that's so sweet.
Right.
And it means the world. They're not required to go, that is so sweet. Love emoji. Send. Thank you. I mean, it's like you. And then I know some people will always do that.
Yeah.
And then other, and I feel guilty not doing that sometimes, even when, but other times you're like, I'm not really giving anything better than that. I don't know.
How do you do with people that, I have a few people that I text that I know it's just them. It's how they text everyone. I know it, but it affects me regardless every time. And I'm trying to get, when they don't use any punctuation or capitals.
Oh my God. Lack of punctuation means anger, right?
Right.
Like, that, or why is like that not universally understood?
If it's only a period, if you're just putting periods at the end of every sentence, it just sounds
and
like
it's
you're
three
being
words.
Terse.
A three-word sentence with a period means your friendship is on the brink.
Right.
Yeah.
But if that's the way they always communicate, even if I know that's the way they always communicate, I still take it personally.
Yes.
Oh, sure. Well, and you're both younger than me, but I know for people that are like younger, they they've done been studies like when people text and they put a period at the end of a text, that means you're mad at them.
Right.
They interpret it that way. So when you say something period means like, do it.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn that too about being like, oh, just leave. Don't put a period on the end if you don't need to, or exclamation point. I am so, I hyper correct with, I have a thing. I don't usually write LOL. I usually write ha ha. Same thing, but I write ha ha. Sometimes I do a heart side. I make sure it's like fine because I'm like, I don't want to come off like I'm mad or like anything is like, you know, too curt, you know. But yes, I have learned that some people, it's just this long. Also, some people that do the voice to text, it's just like, I have no idea. It's just like they talk into it, which drives me crazy. I'm like,
I type it out. I do that.
But see, like, some people, we all have different ways
of doing it. Well, sometimes it's nails. And so we need to be like, the people that have like the long nails or gels or things like that, the texting is a lot harder. So I understand, Jordan, I'm talking to you. I know you're listening right now. I understand. Mm. You can keep doing your speak to text. That's fine. I know your nails are very, they get in the way.
Yes. Yeah, I know it's true. Now, are y'all, and I think I should know this about both of you, but I don't think I have an answer. Are you a giant one long paragraph texter or do you do one line at a time?
Well, I like to make paragraphs within my single text, so I will like I'll organize the one text so it'll have like an extra space in it, because I don't like when I'm getting like ding, 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 ding.
I'm 100% the same way you are.
This is one text that I sent today.
Oh my god.
Different. And that's all in one. It's hard to see, but that's all one text. That's not all single
it's
lines,
one
right?
One text. It doesn't even fit on the screen at the same time.
I will send a giant opus. Also, I have a thing about text versus email that people laugh at me. I'm like, is this an emailable thing or is this a text thing? And I usually go, if I want to reach out about something, I usually move it to email as quickly as I can when it's a business thing. And if it's a if it's on the day, like today we were running a little late, I text you both because it's happening right now and I know you'll get it versus like, you know, in the future, like I like to immediately move things business-wise, because texts, you like forget them. But I can't stand, and I love my friends that do it, but I don't like when they do those single line texts, because you keep getting notification. And it's always when I'm like in traffic and trying to find somewhere, and my phone keeps going off, or I'm just trying to do something else, and you're just getting text after text after text. So
don't do it.
I'm notorious, and both of you know this about me, is that I am on a group text. I will usually sometimes email the group and then I immediately go, Drew Drogi left this conversation. And I'm fully aware. I know when people are talking about me. I know it happens and I don't care, because that is a moment where I know there is nothing you can say about me in the group and go for it. Have fun. Talk all the shit.
Do you think that you could get some mileage? Also, I have something written in the chat that I want to hear both of your reactions to on how you would read this in a text message. I'm going to send that in 1 second.
Oh, I love it.
But I wonder if, yes, Drew, please, you should have some kind of pre-recorded message or pre-written out message in a note that you say, like, your feelings on group chats and why you can't do it. You send that to the group chat and then you abruptly leave.
Oh yeah,
oh, I love it.
That's
great. That would be peak Drew.
Just like
create
a very strong boundary with all of them, and then exit stage left. Okay, this is a text that a friend of mine sometimes sends, and I just want to hear your feelings on it. I will describe it.
Oh wow,
I'm ready.
Like,
I'm
what
so
do you think of? Do you see it?
Oh, they write.
Oh,
so this is
like
for
how would
listeners
this,
only.
Wait, before you say it, can you give me a stage reading? Interpretation of how you would read that if that came up in a script for your character.
Ha ha.
Ha ha.
It's just H-A-H-A period.
Period. Ha ha period.
And no space.
This friend of mine, Sterling Suleiman, this friend of mine texts this in joy.
I'm going to go work with him this weekend.
Are you?
I'm going to get to work with him this weekend.
Oh,
yes, yes.
You
I'm
need
excited.
To write that down somewhere for him.
I will.
Just ha ha,
ha ha. Well,
it's the. Well, it
just depends, because I believe like they mean ha ha, but with a period, really, the period really
is doing a lot of work. That period.
It's one of the few situations in which the period doesn't make it sound terse. It just makes it sound socially awkward.
It makes it sound sarcastic.
It's the end of a thought.
Yeah.
Ha ha.
For me, it makes it sound sarcastic, like, ha ha.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And I, you know, I think sometimes that helps is if you, I will sometimes, and you, I'll write, ba, I'll write, B-A-H-A-H-A-A-A-A.
Yes.
Ha ha ha. Meaning I love it.
Yeah, that.
Or I'll just laugh at the comment.
Yes.
But I personally, what drives me crazy is when somebody says something and then they comment on their own comment, the crying laughing emoji, like turned on its side, laughing so hard at their own comment. And I know that that's people just trying to be like, I'm being nice. I'm not trying to be a bitch when I say this. Whatever. But it sometimes comes off like, I am so hilarious. I'm crying at my own thought.
Wait, is it they use the emoji in the text at the end, or they're using like the ha-ha feature that you can press on the text? They use the emoji?
No, they're using an emoji at the end. Like they say something and then they put a laughing emoji at the end of their own statement.
So,
like, oh, it's
I
so
have
hilarious.
A friend. I have a friend who does that whenever he says something super obnoxious. Like he'll say something kind of bratty because he's a little bratty and I love him and he's like a brother to me. But, you know, he can be kind of a brat. And then his way of like diffusing it is to end it with that. And it makes me so much angrier than if you were just a brat.
Absolutely. No, like, I know.
Just be
it's
a
that,
brat.
Like, I'm adorable. I went there. I'm crazy. Oh, I'm too much.
Well, it's also like, it's like, I know that what I just said was super obnoxious, and I still decided to send it.
Uh-huh.
But I'm going to couch it in this cuteness to let you know that I'm not a brat.
Tee-hee. Yes.
Ew. Ew, ew, ew. No, I know. And it's also, though, like, we all have different ways of doing it. And I don't know who taught me that, like, you know, I write ha-ha after my thing, and that's no different from the laughing emoji. And other people listening going, that is insane. But it's just weird how we process different things. But, I mean, I'm glad we all know, we've all agreed that send a paragraph for a text.
Yes.
What else did we learn today? We're all different miracles.
Different miracles, everyone.
Different miracle babies. We've learned how to lie very well.
And I think we can probably universally agree that ba-ha-ha-ha is the superior laugh through text as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's what
and
I
if
think.
And if you don't think something's funny and you want to say like, very funny, H-A-H-A period is a great way to respond to that.
Yes, exactly. Also, I have a thing about just like giving compliments. I mean, just lie. You know, like, you don't have to, like, you know, and maybe that person genuinely thinks it's funny. That's how they, but, like, if you don't, whatever, it's like, what do you lose? It's not like you're only given so many laughs in your life. You're only given so many nice things to say in your life. Just, ha-ha, I mean it.
Can I ask one question before it feels like we're wrapping up? But I just wanted to know.
Yeah, so wrapping up, but yes, please.
In like, because I want to know, when you type out a sentence, like in English class, were you taught that at the end of a sentence you do space, space, and then start a new sentence?
Yes.
Or did you learn, finish a sentence, space, start a new sentence?
Space, space, two spaces.
But apparently it's not that anymore, because I also learned space, space.
It's not that anymore.
And I when I first felt it, I hated it. I hated the double space, but now the single space, I think it's so much cleaner.
I've been able to fully transition into single space, but I used to do space space all the time, and people explained it was with typewriters, and it was a way of really, like, it really did. It was connected with ease of reading, like with the two spaces made it clear that the sentence was over, and now because each letter used to be given the same amount of space, no matter how, whatever the size or width of the letter was.
Wow, I'm so glad I asked about this.
And so now, like digitally, they're able to leave enough of enough room after a period to let you know that it's a new sentence. And two spaces looks weird. It just looks, it's actually an aesthetics thing. It actually looks bad to the two spaces.
So that makes a lot of sense. Wow. This was...
Yeah. It's like a grammatical appendix.
Can I go back? I have a new minor revelation.
What is it?
It's when you're...
The
it's
spaces?
About, yeah, it's about spaces.
You know, the more you... And also, it's like a thing where I will fully admit with some people, I go, I'm old and this is how I do it. But then also you're like, oh, that's one of those things that people immediately go, they're old.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I have an MSN email address, so that's my, like, really talk about, you know, old, you know.
When you run into someone with an AOL.com, that's when that's it really...
That's the one.
That's the
yeah,
limit.
Yeah, or Earthlink. That's always the one. You're kind of like, okay. Great.
I like
great,
someone
great,
who's still holding onto their college email address.
Oh, I've only had two. I've had my college email address when the email was created, where we would check your email once a week, you know, at the theater department library, where I would usually go like once a week and get like 8 emails in the week. Or, and then when I moved out here, I've had the same email address since then, and I keep meaning to change it because I get so much spam. Let me just tell you. Yeah.
I do not want to say who this is, but they are somebody who is like very well known, very successful, and still have their college email address. And every time we're on a business email together, I'm like, what are you doing? What's wrong with you?
Like, is it at EDU?
Yes.
Without telling us who it is it like a prestigious college that seems like, oh, I'd like people to know that I went to Stanford or whatever?
It's a good college.
You don't have to tell us the college. Yeah. Don't have to tell us the college. Just, it feels like. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
I just can't believe that it would still work. I thought those EDUs would like,
yeah, how much space do they have on the servers at these colleges where they're like, oh, everybody gets to keep it?
I don't know. I mean, this person, at least 15 years
wow.
at this point.
Interesting.
Oh, my God.
Interesting.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Is it Chelsea Clinton?
I knew it.
Yeah, it's Chelsea Clinton.
I knew it.
That's the one. I figured it was her. Sounds like a classic Chelsea move. I have no idea. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna start that. Well, I love you both. Thank you so much for doing this. We're like run out of time. We've gone way over, and I love it. We've had such a good conversation.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you for bearing with me being late, both of you.
Oh, it was fine. We were all getting started late. Ryan was here an hour early and ready to work.
Well, we're all different miracles, and so
yeah, he's also miracles. Lying about that.
That's right. Well, thanks, Drew, for not even let that lie live for a moment. Just
I can't wait to send this to your mom and bring all this up.
You're right. Back off. I almost wasn't born. Okay.
Yikes.
Miracles. Different miracles.
Friend of the Pod Productions.